wonder if you've ever taken a bite of something and found what you'd expected it to be delicious, but you found it to be nasty. Maybe an apple. It's happened to me with an apple that was rotten. Maybe one of those chocolates that look beautiful on the outside, but inside there's a really hot chili hidden inside. Is a good joke, that one. Studying wisdom in the book of Proverbs. We asked last week how to find the good life. We saw that all things being equal and with painful exceptions, God's wisdom leads to the good life. Generally in the present and always in eternity. And that's through faith in Christ. And that's the truth. But the fact is there are many lies out there, aren't there? Things that promise the good life, they look fantastic. They call good things bad and bad things good. And they lead, in fact, to the bad life ultimately, to death in the end. And maybe nowhere do we hear those voices more loudly than when it comes to love and marriage and relationships. I realise this is a tricky subject. Some perhaps long for nothing more than romantic love, but haven't found it. Others maybe had romantic love once upon a time, but now there's just a gaping, aching hole. Still others, perhaps most painfully, are in relationships where there is no love. Out there, a third of marriages don't last 20 years. And 50% of people who lived together 20 years ago now live on their own. And yet it doesn't stop people from trying. Last year as a country, we spent 60% more on internet dating than the previous year. And I wonder, what do you think would be the most common phrase people type into Google? What do people search on Google most often? The question is, what is love? That's what they type. What is love? And into that turmoil, God speaks and he puts his finger on the problem. Let's see together. Chapter 5. Verse 1, Proverbs chapter 5, page 448 in the Church Bibles, and verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion, and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths are crooked, but she knows it not. Once again, King Solomon is speaking to his son, urgently urging him to listen to the truth. Because other lips speak lies. The lips of the adulteress. Literally, the unlawful, the forbidden woman. Verse 3, her words, her kisses, they're coated with honey, but the aftertaste is bitter and poisonous as gall. She's such a smooth talker, verse 3. She can talk us into anything, but later we'll find her forked tongue like a double-edged sword, verse 4, stabbed in our backs, perhaps in our beds. She speaks like an angel. But under the x-ray, she is the grim reaper, it turns out. Verse 5, her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. Of course, Solomon's talking to his son. That's why he talks about the adulteress as a female person. Whether our temptation comes from men or women, we can translate his warning. The truth is, actually, we don't know exactly what Solomon's son was like. We don't know, was he old or young? Was he married or unmarried? Did he have children of his own even? Was this a bedside story with a child or a fireside chat between men? We're not told. And that's helpful because it means we can expect this to be relevant to us in one way or another. Well, Solomon has two urgent things to say to us, negatively and positively. Negatively, first, flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Verses 7 to 14. Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Solomon says, verse 1, listen up, heads up, listen to me. that adulteress keep to a path far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. If she lives in the east, or stay in the west. Don't trust yourself. Don't give her the smallest chance. Flee. Run away. Otherwise, what will happen? Verse 9. Let's pick it up from verse 7. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your best strength to others and your years to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich another man's house. Depending on your translation, the warning in verse 9 is talking about honor or about strength, but maybe both. If we don't flee the adulteress, she will take away both our honor and those few years of kind of youthful prowess. Then who will feast on our wealth? Whose house will our toil enrich? If it's not the woman's pimp, then at least it's her family. Isn't this right up to date? Rightly or wrongly, don't so many people end up giving half their money to support an ex-lover? Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. It will eat up our honour, our strength, our money. But most of all, it will eat us up. Can we see that verse 11? At the end of your life you will groan. When your flesh and body are spent, you will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or listen to my instructors. I have come to the brink of utter ruin in the midst of the whole assembly. Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. I understand that in the current TV series of Downton Abbey, there's a bunch of rather sad storylines. You may know better than me. One of those sad storylines is about Lady Mary, the young widowed heiress of the estate. And one of this was a week ago, I think, so I hope I don't spoil anything for any of you. One of Lady Mary's admirers has seduced her into going on holiday with him, specifically to sleep with her, to try before you buy, as it were. Sadly, common now, scandalous then. But Lady Mary's come back disillusioned, and now her lover is furious. And we don't know how it's going to work out. She could be totally ruined. Then there's James, the footman, found in bed with a guest. He's lost his job. And we feel the pain of Lady Edith, who isn't able to mother her illegitimate child. Now, in our more liberal society, the consequences of those things would be quite different, I suppose. And yet multiplied by the volume of promiscuity. Don't we all know families who've been utterly destroyed by intimacy outside of marriage? Children who lose their parents or lose their faith. Spouses who lose their hearts or lose their families. Grandparents who lose their relationships as well. Maybe there's pain even in this room as a result of this kind of thing. Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Now, one danger with a passage like this for some of us is that we think it's not actually for us. We think, hopefully no one in this room is actually facing an adulteress who's actually trying to lure you into her bed. But however intense or not the temptation may be, now is exactly the moment to take Solomon's warning very seriously. Flee. It's an old illustration, but it's hard to beat. There was a rich man, and he was looking for a new chauffeur to drive his car. Several chauffeurs applied for the job. The rich man set them a test. He invited them to a local cliff top, and he gave them each the chance to drive his Rolls Royce, and he asked each one of them to drive the car as close as they dared to the cliff. One chauffeur drove within 6 feet of the cliff. He thought he'd done pretty well. The next chauffeur drove within 3 feet. The next chauffeur drove just 1 foot from the cliff. He thought he was the greatest. But the final chauffeur didn't go anywhere near the cliff. He just stayed in the car park. Well, who do you think got the job? Obviously, the last one. The owner was looking for a chauffeur who would drive safely. And he chose the one who stayed in the car park. The owner wanted to stay as far from danger as possible. Some Christians ask, how close am I allowed to go? Where's the line between sin and what's okay? They try to push the boundaries of what they can wear or what's the maximum physical contact that I'm allowed to have or something else. But that's the wrong decision, isn't it? That's the wrong question, isn't it? That's trying to drive as close as you can to the cliff. I wonder how close we are tonight. I wonder if we're zooming with an engine load of testosterone, peering over the precipice. Or if we sat in the car park, the engine's turned off, we're wondering what all the fuss is about. Or if we're somewhere in between. Well, whoever we are, God says here tonight, flee. Get up, get away. Move even further from that temptation. Get even further away. Because intimacy without marriage destroys. I wonder what that would mean in practice for us. Maybe slightly different for each of us, I expect, in different circumstances, different weaknesses. But let's ask ourselves, where is my weak point? If I was the devil, how would I tempt me? How can I run away? Maybe it's... could be all sorts of things, couldn't it? Maybe it's not watching TV after 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Maybe it's making sure the computers at home are always in a public room. Maybe it's not spending time alone with someone of the opposite sex. Maybe there are certain public venues where you know you'd be tempted. Not wise places to go. Maybe it's saying you won't watch films that are rated over 18 or over 15. And we'll each have to decide, how can I best flee? Maybe you're a teenager, and all your friends seem to have girlfriends or boyfriends. But actually, if you're not old enough to get married, then you have to ask, honestly, what's the point? I know I sound like a granddad saying that. But won't it actually just lead to much greater temptation than you need to face at this time? Maybe someone here has a very specific temptation. There's that one person, actually, and whether they intend it or not, you just find them very tempting. And maybe could you just avoid them? Flee. At work, could you ask your boss to switch you to a different team? Without being rude, could you just avoid social occasions where they'll be there? Let me be really specific for a moment. When I was young, we never really came across porn, even soft porn, because you had to go into the newsagent to buy it, and that was almost unthinkable. But now everyone has a computer, still worse, a smartphone. We have no protection in the face of that kind of stuff. One simple click, and there it is. Can I recommend to you, and especially to the men out there, can I recommend a piece of software called Covenant Eyes? There are probably alternatives out there. But Covenant Eyes, it records all the websites that you visit on your computer, your tablet, or your mobile phone. And you nominate a friend, someone you can trust, or maybe your spouse. And regularly it sends a list of all the websites you've been to that person confidentially, so they can talk over it with you. It may be that many of us are doing okay in that area at the moment. But actually, who knows when temptations will come? And the point is not how close can I safely get. The point is how far can I run away, isn't it? May I suggest, if you're a bloke, this is the week to download Covenant Eyes or similar. I'm not saying you have to do it to be a good Christian. I just think it's incredibly helpful. No one's going to ask, why are you downloading it? Because, if we all do it this week, that's easy, isn't it? And if anyone is in danger of addiction, then it's a lifeline. And for the rest of us, it's a safety net. Blokes, can we support each other by just doing that this week? There is a small cost. If that's a problem for anyone, just say. But frankly, what price a soul? And what about our children? A way to protect our families from this kind of thing. If we make sure our children wear seatbelts in the car, then may I say we'll use this kind of software to protect them at home as well. Now, I'm a bloke, clearly. I kind of understand blokes. I'm clearly not a lady, and you're a mysterious lot. I'm not sure I always understand women. So honestly, I'm not sure how to apply this stuff to women and to girls. And please forgive me for that. To some extent, you're going to have conversations afterwards and work it out for yourselves. But I wonder if the temptation for women and girls is not so much the pictures you see. I'm sure it could be. But I wonder if more so it's the people you spend time with. Us blokes have a big problems with what we see. But when you wear skimpy clothes, please have mercy on us with what you wear. But I wonder for women if your temptation is more from physical touch. And if there are ways that you could guard yourselves or that we could be kind to you in that area. And if our temptation is more images in the media, I wonder if you're more tempted by stories in novels. I wonder if there are certain authors you just need to avoid. And not necessarily just the really explicit novels, maybe novels that paint the kind of Hollywood picture of romantic happy ever after, as if that really happens in true life. Because in reality, us blokes aren't Prince Charming. Well, let's each take time to apply this to ourselves. Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Now, of course, the trouble remains that we've all failed in one way or another in this area, haven't we? Maybe you're sitting there feeling very guilty because you know you're in deep trouble in this area or you have been in the past. And while it's important to do all we can to be godly going forwards in God's strength, we desperately need someone to deal with the past and to deal with our guilt and to deal with the present, to deal with our guilt and our shame. And we need someone to fight our battles for us because we know we're so weak. Well, as we flee, let's run into the forgiving, strengthening arms of Jesus. You turn in your Bibles, please, to Hebrews chapter 4. I referred briefly to these verses last week. But as they're worth looking at properly, Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 14. The author has been urging his readers to pay more careful attention to what they've heard, to this, the scriptures and the gospel of Christ, so that they don't drift away. He's been referring to the Old Testament, how there was a high priest to deal with sin, and how Jesus is the ultimate high priest. And so he says, chapter 4, verse 14, "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who's been tempted in every way just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." Let's flee into the arms of Jesus. Jesus understands our trouble because it says he's been tempted in every way just as we are. Jesus alone is qualified to help us because he alone was without sin. He alone has taken his machete and blazed a trail through the jungle of life so that he can get you and me safely to the other side. He's battled through the valley of the shadow of death, to the point of death itself, and in those hours of darkness on the cross, he went through hell, and God in Jesus bore his own anger for my wrongdoing and yours. So as we trust and follow Jesus, we might know God only in love. Only in love and not in the judgment that we deserve. That's why it says in verse 16, let's approach the throne of grace with confidence. We can be confident before God as we trust in Jesus. Verse 16 says that we may receive mercy. Mercy for our sin in the past and find grace. Grace looking to the future to help us in our time of need. Wonder if you've come to Jesus for mercy and grace. Wonder if we've handed our guilt over to him and accepted his love. You could pray that even tonight. Say sorry for your wrongdoing. Say thanks for what he's done. Ask him to help you to live his way. Why don't you do that tonight? Then however much we've sinned, we're totally forgiven. And God sees us as perfect as Jesus is. As the Bible says, though our sins are as scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. For God is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I said Solomon had two urgent things to say to us, and that's the negative. Flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Well, it's taken a large part of our time. But now as you turn back to Proverbs chapter 5, let's turn to the positive. And secondly, finally, and much more briefly, be faithful. Secondly, be faithful. Intimacy within marriage should delight. Verses 15 to 20. Proverbs chapter 5, page 449, verse 15. Would you look down and see that with me, please? Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breasts satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an adulteress? Why embrace the bosom of another man's wife? I said we're not told if Solomon's son is married yet or is still a young lad. But Solomon urges him, be faithful. Intimacy within marriage should delight. I'm grateful that Solomon's used picture language to give an idea of sexual intimacy. And we can't be sure exactly what each detail is meant to represent. But the big picture is clear. If you're married, be faithful within your marriage. Why should you ask your neighbour for a drink when you've got sweet, delicious water to drink at home? Why should you allow your precious water to flood all over the road? Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Now this is a command. It's a command for those of us who are blessed with marriage at this time, or if we're hoping to be married one day. Be faithful. Maybe you're married and, to be honest, there's not much intimacy in your marriage. And what intimacy you have, honestly, it's not great. Hollywood raises expectations, doesn't it, that are ridiculously high. And for many people, the reality may disappoint. Intimacy in marriage, it may not always delight, and yet it should. These verses aren't a guarantee that every bedtime will be exotic and passionate. But Solomon is urging his son, telling his son to make a choice, to choose that he will delight in marital intimacy. Verse 18, may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. Go on, rejoice in her. Verse 19, may you ever be captivated by her love. Go on, choose to make her your standard of beauty. Does the world say you have to be a certain size or shape to be beautiful? Well, no. Let's choose to love our wife or husband for what they are like. I don't know everyone's experience here. purely statistically, there may be some here who've been abused in their marriage or in other relationships. And however hard you try, you feel there's little genuine love or affection there. I'm not here to twist a dagger. But for most of us who are married, here is God's surprising command to be intimate in marriage and to do all we can to make it delightful. Fact is that people aren't making love so much these days. Across society, worries about money and the distractions of social media are killing people's love lives. And as Christians, we can be so focused on doing all sorts of things and being busy as well as that other stuff, that there's little romance in our marriages anymore. Some people try to counteract that by setting aside a weekly date night with their spouse. Now, you may feel that's too formal or not practical in your family. But one way or another, we've got to promote intimacy in marriages to be faithful. I realize, again, these may be painful verses for some who feel they're missing out in this area. And what hope is there for us? There's much we could say, but let's focus on the most important, and that is this. That marital love is not the ultimate love. The ultimate love is the love of Christ for his people. And that is something we can all enjoy, should all enjoy, more and more. Turn finally, if you would, to the book of Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5. Paul is quoting from Genesis, from the creation of the first couple, Adam and Eve. And we're in page 827 of the Church Bibles. Famous verses. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 31. He says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." And at one level, he's talking about marriage, but then he says this, verse 32. "This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church." It's a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. When I was an engineer, I used to love nothing better than sitting down with a big piece of paper and a pencil and a ruler and drawing. I was actually drawing sewers. It was one of those glamorous jobs, you see. But I loved those pencil sketches showing the... the streets and all the utilities and the manholes and drawing maps and cross sections and making sure they went downhill in an ideal world. And you may joke, but to me they were like works of art. And yet they were only pictures, tiny, oversimplified, two-dimensional pictures of the ultimate. And see, the ultimate, you had to watch months later in a street on the other side of the country as men in hard hats operated great big yellow diggers and laid miles and miles of shiny pipes, in theory. Now, it's not meant to be a flippant illustration. But if we're married, yes, we're to invest in our marriage, like maybe with those pictures, to make them as beautiful as possible. It's a small... And yet, even then, we're to remember that they're not the ultimate. They're not the ultimate. It's a small and often deeply flawed picture of the relationship between Christ and his people, the church. And that is perfect. And whoever we are, whatever we're going through tonight, whether we're very young or very old or married or not, or whoever we are, if we are trusting in Jesus, then we have the ultimate relationship that most people don't have. We are part of God's church of all time and space. And through the church, we enjoy relationship with the most charming of princes and the most awesome of captains. He knows what it is to be single. On earth, he never married. But his love for us is devoted. His affection is constant. His leadership is strong. He is a captain and a king to lead us through life and into glory. Then shall we follow him? The contemporary philosopher Simon May has argued that the reason our society both idolizes human love and finds that it fails He says the reason is because we've given up on the unconditional love that God offers. And the journalist, BBC journalist Mark Vernon comments, he says this. He says, we seek instead unconditional love from our fellow humans. We make them gods, and of course they fail us. And then love turns to hate. So we seek and find love ultimately in the one place which will never disappoint, in God. Shall we love him first and worship him alone? Shall we beg God to fill the empty hole in our thirsty lives? Shall we cultivate relationship with him every day through his word and through prayer? And he will fill us with such unconditional love that whether we're married or not, young or old, we'll be able to share that love with those around us. Fill us with mercy to share to those who upset us. Fill us with undeserved grace to share. Shall we be faithful? Because God is faithful to us. We've seen first, flee. Intimacy without marriage destroys. Secondly, be faithful. Intimacy within marriage should delight.